This is a Christian Science extemporaneous statement by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. If you have not done so recently, it is encouraged that you listen to an introductory to the prayer treatments. The text of the strategy and tactics on every topic which relates to truth versus error, which is virtually every topic that exists, will be provided along with the MP3 for this recording. Therefore, reference to this valuable study aid will be made when related to a specific subtopic herein. Another reference on the website are two topics. One is entitled Effective Healing to Heal Everything. There are also 400 plus prayer treatments that are on specific topics which should be of immeasurable value related to an endeavor of improving one's own life, which of course means to replace chaos with, as one works along the path, infinite progression, concrete being. Then Isaiah offers words in chapter 28, verse 10, where he says, "For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little." Mary Baker Eddy felt that was such valuable wisdom that she included that as an introduction to chapter 14, Recapitulation, which is the most important chapters in the text, for it is a summary of chapters 1 through 13 and 24 question and answer for three other pieces of valuable wisdom to the textbook itself. Ye shall know the truth, and Jesus. 2. Thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. 3. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou. One way one may want to look at the third, we are in alignment with the laws of God, the only source, then our prayer will be answered. In fact, they'll probably be solved in advance of even becoming a problem. The preventative nature of Christian Science healing is of extreme value. But we must do what Mary Baker Eddy suggests, which is to bar our door against thieves and murderers. And of course, she refers to us, and murderers refer to evil in various forms. Another very important, between evil and devil, the one letter represents personalizing evil, giving it a face, giving it a personality, whether it's us or someone else, and not with the concept of a devil. For we cannot heal a devil. In other words, proof that it has no source or cannot be manifested. And make sure we don't give it in which it can manifest itself. What is one way that our door of thought against thieves and murderers? Mary Baker Eddy says that we are barraged constantly with suggestions of mortal mind thoughts. They're always a diversion from a lot of documents that prove that Christ Jesus, Mary Baker Eddy, Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldsmith, and Frederick L. Rawson were to heal instantaneously. If we want to achieve success in instantaneous healing, it behooves us to study the lives of those five. Now, the reason that the other three besides Christ Jesus and Mary is because their office appointments were 15 minutes each. 15 minutes, their healing was complete, or whomever sought assistance from them weight given to the nature of the problem. It reminds one of something that is Joel Goldsmith, wherein he was sought to go to the Benevolent Association, which is a Christian Science nursing home in the Boston area, and the individual was seeking his assistance for, and so he agreed to come there, entered into the reception area. The receptionist stated that he could not enter into the rest of the building. Everyone on every floor, and there were several hundred involved, deal with the same problem, which was considered a contagious disease. He promptly replied, "There's only one problem." She says, "Well, you can't go in there anyway." His response to that was to sit down and do his mental work, the non-existence and disease, pointing to, in a few minutes, the nurses started coming out and asking the receptionist what happened. She said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, everybody is healed all at the same time." Einstein said, "One cannot find a solution to a problem if they're working on the same level as where the problem was discovered." Smith, obviously, was very familiar with that concept because he did not either quantity or content to have any influence on seeing the nothingness. Wentworth Winslow, another one of the three that had 15, approached it this way. He said, "Think of yourself of being in a room, and on one side is a phone that is ringing its head off, trying to get your attention, and if you pick it up, you will let it get it in your door of consciousness that it is totally real. On the other side of the room, that is announcing only qualities of God, because it's tuned in to station KOG. He says, pay total attention, but to the telephone that is ringing, only make a clear statement. You do not accept anything that it may be trying to say when it is ringing, realizing that accept what is coming from the kingdom of God. God is perfect. God is in the kingdom of heaven, image and likeness, and therefore, and balance, none whatsoever. No deviation from the one mind that represents all mental activity. No deviation from substance, which is spirit, which is flawless. No deviation from the five spiritual senses, which is spiritual seeing, spiritual hearing, which means spiritual understanding. Spiritual feeling is divine consciousness. Spiritual smell, which is intuition of character. And spiritual taste, which is relish. We are not going to accept the five senses which we are blessed with from God that accept anything of matter or me from spirit, which is flawless, the real substance. Each time is stated with conviction and purpose, adding precept upon precept. Are referencing, putting line upon line, and as we do it in repetition, a little and there little, building up to concord. On 591 in Science and Health, Book of Christian Science, which is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy, she states that man is of infinite spirit. Expression of all of these references, the website, and either listed under of daily study in the checklist that is prayer treatment referred to previously. Mary Baker Eddy states that you must find the root of the, not the symptom, that's too obvious. There's always something different than the symptom, and we must expose it within our own consciousness, because that's the consciousness that we have first and foremost. And we must recognize and claim that truth in consciousness, anything else that harbors or makes a resonance there, except truth, any form whatsoever, has no source, no home or residence, deprived of any power. It has no intelligence, truth, or substance. All is infinite mind. Is no manifestation of evil of any, because it has no source. It has no foundation. It has no resonance that can claim any space, lot, whatsoever. If we couple that, referring to some of the things that we could use to build a model in our, such as definitions. On page 465, and page 587, there's a definition. And I mentioned on page definition of man in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27 and 28. Another reference to man, stating very clearly that man is made in the image and likeness of God. And at the end, that's the sixth day of creation, as it and at the end it says that everything that God made was very good. Page 587 is the definition of good. It states that good is God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience. So how could there be any action, since God is the only action? There could not be. Therefore, there can be no accident. How can there be any disease? This dis-ease, in other words, any lack of concord. There cannot. Because principle is balance and harmony and structure. And it includes system, which is an activity, is of the substance of spirit, which is flawless. And think about the five spiritual senses that were stated previously. Nothing in there indicates any room being able to see, smell, or taste anything, but all based on spirit, which is flawless. So therefore, there can be no operation of principle that is chaotic. Life is living the qualities of God. And every single quality of God is prefaced with the word omni, which means one, only, and all linked to spirit, which is the only substance, which is flawless. So therefore, our life can only be flawless, only perfect, a progress towards concrete being. And our progress is infinite. Infinite progression. What else do we need to do? Progress. This progress, which is infinite, have to think about truth, is the healer, because it is the opposite of error and a disease, a sin, sickness, death. They are all mistakes. They are an improper perception of life. Recall that life is living the quality. God is of the substance of spirit. God is spirit, which is flawless. Truth, being on a train that goes down a track, where it's attached to the track as it moves along, cannot ever get off the track, but stays right on the path that is God. That's what truth is. There's no error in truth. Our motive must be based on pure perfection. All thought, speech, and action must be based on pure perfection. And it stems from lack and total absence of mistakes. Anything unlike God, nothing can be a mistake and be truth. Therefore, the life of his image likeness is perfect in thought. Block out anything of pure consciousness. Said, page 146 of the textbook. Important sentences in the entire textbook is stated at 146. And you can be assured, if you ask 100 or claim to be Christian Scientists, claim to have studied the Bible seriously, not find a single person to what is referred to herein, that the Bible was Mary Baker Eddy's Science and Health, the only one. In fact, she says to as far as she follows Christ Jesus. I doubt if you'll find another founder, discoverer, or of any other religion that would make such a statement. And yet, Christ Jesus, like Reddy came on the scene, was the only one of the phases of evil, sin, sickness, disease, and death. So what was said? Page 146. It states, divine metaphysics now reduced to a system, comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. Now, what is this system? Look at page 330 in the textbook. She says there are 32 planks. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. Which means healing is going to be the result without any limitation. Doesn't matter what kind of face or personality that it tries to take on. From pages 330 to outlines exactly those 32 planks. Gives you the specific text. It defines the 32 planks. In totality, page 442, she says, Christian Scientists, all unto yourself. She doesn't say go to someone else. Be a law unto yourself. I believe you will find a successful person that has made a name throughout or introducing that if not during the individual's lifetime, afterwards, it was recognized true and revolutionary, reversed what was understood or thought to be understood previously. The very fact that the earth is round, Fibonacci, a genius of a mathematician from Italy, he discovered the relationship of numbers with it relates to the leaves of a tree and the way the veins are there. It translates emotion like a pendulum that swings one way and comes to a halt in the opposite direction. And he measures at what, how did quantum mechanics, which is also referred to as quantum physics, become discovered. They were trying to break down atoms to its smallest element to see what is the origin, breaking it down into smaller and smaller parts. And they finally came to the discovery that the only thing that was there was their perception that there was something there. Because all they could find in the end was energy that was vibrating back and forth at a very rapid speed, looked like it was opaque. When in fact, there was. If any of you have studied anything about Bruce Lee, everyone else in the martial arts, no way anyone could even see what he, because it was such a speed and in such an expected direction that he could not be followed. He had to explain it after it was, why no one could ever hit him. And he started with the premise that martial arts is the science of eliminating conflict. Now how about that for a wholesome attitude in what is considered a deadly sport? And his whole life was based on the science of eliminating conflict. When the most powerful, quickest people would throw a punch, he wouldn't be there. They would hit the air, and most of them would stumble with their own weight, not by anything that he did to hit them. He could change their direction with almost zero pressure because they would be extended to the end of their limit, had no more energy, and then he would redirect one step further, which would twist them. His whole goal, his whole motive, was to eliminate conflict. If everybody had a motive of eliminating conflict, Joe Louis, considered one of the greatest boxers of all time, watched Bruce Lee train, but he was very intelligent as a boxer. After watching him a few minutes, he made one statement. You don't fight. You disappear. Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston and Bruce Lee were all on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And Muhammad Ali bet Sonny Liston that if he would fight Bruce Lee, that he would be defeated in 3 seconds. In other words, Bruce Lee would have won the match within 3 seconds of the beginning. We have the account of it on our website. Everything of that, everything that is in any dimension is based on a structure and a system. Everything. That a structure means have only balance to be harmonious. And the system for any structure comes from mind, which is defined as omniscient, which includes omni-intelligence, and the only substance is spirit, which is flawless. That means the substance of mind is spirit. The substance of spirit itself is spirit. The substance of soul, which is spiritual sense, every one of them. Seeing, hearing, feeling, smell and taste. They are all of the substance of spirit. life is of the substance of spirit. Truth is of the substance of spirit. So what do you think love could be? We've covered everything that you can imagine, right? Can you think of anything we haven't covered? And what do you think love is? What does a mother represent? A father represents life. What does a mother represent? Love. What does love do? Love nurtures everything. That's why it is saved until last. It is discussed in Genesis chapter 1 as the seventh day of creation. It is the last, because it is when God has finished everything. Love represents wholeness, completeness, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth, as well as love itself. A mother nurtures what needs to be nurtured to bring forth total fulfillment. If she has one child that needs one thing, another child needs something different, a third child needs something different, whatever. However many children she has, she nurtures whatever is needed, starting at their level and bringing them up to a perfect standard. That's what she strives for. We recommend a number of movies, and one of them is called Remember the Goal. It is highly recommended. I will just tell you a couple of sentences. The teacher says, pay no attention to anyone else on the track. She's cross-country running team. She says, pay no attention on the track. You are not running someone else's race. You are running the race of perfection. Where they are, ahead of you, behind you, on the right or the left, makes no difference. You pay attention to your goal. Hence the title. You need to watch it. Another movie that is very worthwhile, and it relates to the next thing I'm going to tell you. And the title of it is, what do you think the next thing is that we haven't discussed that's very important? It was mentioned that love is wholeness, completeness. That means that it relates to healing, anything else. Because that's the opposite of it. And the power of truth comes from mind. Because mind is, but love puts a requirement. It puts a requirement on mind, spirit, soul, principle, and life, as well as that requirement could be. It was mentioned previously, if you want to be successful, people that have been successful, and study them, not them as a person, but they conduct their life. What is their principle that they stick to? What is their standard? What is their procedure? And again, it's not theirs, it's the procedure, the rules, the system, the structure. It all has to be depersonalized. Remember, devil versus evil. Take the D out. Another way you could look at the word devil versus evil is that devil gives a dimension to evil. So instead of evil, it is a D-E-V-I-L. You're giving a dimension. We don't want to give anything to evil. Nothing. Nada. Absolutely nothing. No thing. No place. No thought. No action. No home. No residence. No thought at all. Period. No consciousness. Not an inkling of effort, period. And we can't be passive because evil is like a mushroom. It grows when no one is watching. It's like a magician. It makes the change when you're not watching. because you're distracted by design. Another movie that is recommended is Joshua, the biblical character, Joshua. Remember, he was the one, he's a mason, and he was building a concrete wall that they passed through, they being the children of Israel, as they were escaping from slavery in Egypt, the Pharaoh. They didn't know where they were going. Moses didn't know what to do. And they got to the Red Sea. And of course, you all know now, because I've given you so many clues, the Red Sea parted, but not until Moses put his foot in the water. Another way to look at verse 26 and 27 of Genesis chapter 1 is in verse 26, it says, "Let us make man in our image." Now, Mary Baker Eddy says the us refers to life, truth, and love. In other words, we have to follow life, truth, and love in order to be an image and likeness of God. But another way I like to look at it is that we have to open our thought to being the image and likeness of God before we can be it. God doesn't wait on us. From this viewpoint, we cannot experience it if we're not receptive. Just like Jesus asked a number of the do you have faith? You can. He had a difficult time healing people in Galilee, the area that he grew up and was raised, where he was supposedly born, Galilee, because they thought of him as a child, or because that was his until he was age 30, when according to their law, he could be considered mature and could begin his ministry. The Bible advises not to go before swine. When Herod asked Jesus in the trial, "What is truth?" What did Jesus say? The silence just now in this recording tells you what he said. Nada. He didn't speak. He knew he would be casting pearls before swine. There's no way the king would have listened to anything he would have said anyway, because Jesus knew he was already condemned. There wasn't any use in trying to defend himself. So he did not. Jesus was a man of few words. In another place he says, "Say, yea, yea." When Jesus was at the temple and he overthrew the table, did he argue with them? Did he look upon them as being personified as the devil? Or did he look only at the evil? He removed the D from devil. He prevented them from using the tool by destroying the tool. He never said a word to them, I don't believe. He certainly didn't have any hand-to-hand combat with them. He didn't argue with the devil. Supposedly, in the Bible it says the devil, but it's really evil. In the three temptations when he was just coming out of the desert of 40 days and 40 nights before he began his ministry, all he did was quote the Bible. That was the opposite of what the devil was trying to tempt him to do. In all three cases, he offered a Bible quote. That was the opposite. He didn't argue. He said, yea, yea, nay, nay, by quoting the Bible verse that was appropriate, that reversed what was being proposed by the personification of evil. So think about Jesus, Mary Baker Eddy. They were both attacked all the time. Neither one of them attacked the attackers. She was attacked all the time by the media. One case in particular stands out where she was accused of being prayerless. All she did was publish the answer. And she said, I pray 3 times a day for the benefit of all humanity. She doesn't say this in that particular quote, but she later said that she prayed out to make sure that she was following Dr. Fluno, stated in his page and a half letter entitled Criticism, and also is stated in, it's credited to her. There's some people doubt that she's the one that wrote it, but she certainly could have if she didn't, and it's called The Secret. In the page and a half on Criticism by Dr. Fluno, he was on the board of lectureship in 1898, I believe, is when he was appointed to it. It said that criticism leads to all evil. Criticism leads to all evil. Not that criticism is just one evil. It leads to all evil. All. A-L-L. Evil. All. Every evil possible comes from the source of criticism, and include self-criticism. If we are striving to be the image and likeness of God, do we want to spend our day criticizing God's image and likeness? So we're included. But usually, the individual's effort is to criticize others. And what does the letter about the secret say? She says she had found the most effective way for instantaneous healing was to self-exam, to be sure, voting total thought, speech, and act, to seeing perfection in everyone and everything all the time. She did it every hour of the day. She did self-examination. She stopped whatever she was doing every hour of the day. So you can imagine that she did this 20 times. She doesn't say how long she devoted to it. A minute or 5 minutes, whatever it was. She wanted to remind herself every hour that that was the way to have instantaneous healing. So why would she want to devote any time to thinking poorly about her attackers? She eliminated the possibility and reminded herself to stay on that track of keeping it out of thought. The possibility, intelligence or substance, in an attack. And the attacks were not against her, they were against truth. We cannot give any weight to any attack against truth being personalized. We cannot let it be personalized. If we look in the mirror, whoever is seen in the mirror as being the receiver of an attack. We have to look in the mirror and see the image and likeness of God, which cannot harbor any ill thoughts about anyone. She has an article entitled Love Your Enemies. She states, who is thine enemy except what you think in your thought? Is it? I believe that's in Miscellaneous Writings, page 8, the second article. Science and Health is the longest with 700 pages, and Miscellaneous Writings and Miscellany are two other books. These tie in directly, these thoughts, with Dr. Fluno about criticism leads criticizing an attacker is criticizing everyone as an idea of God, not the mortal symbol. We're looking beneath the symptom to destroy the evil instead of let us be destroyed, moving the D, and we're destroying the evil, not trying to destroy the devil. Forget the personality. Forget the symbol. Remember about the idea of God, not about a personification of Jesus. Could not have healed a single individual if he would have looked upon as having a problem. He had to see them as the perfect image and likeness of God. I believe it was the disciples that asked him about one of the men. I think it was the man that was blind birth. They said, who did sin, this man or his parents? Jesus said, neither did this man sin nor his parents. The glory of God will be made manifest. That was what he saw as the purpose of the man having a problem, giving an opportunity to see the nothingness of the problem. What was Jesus doing? What is the one word, anything else that describes what Jesus was doing every time he interacted with someone else? Every time. Same with Mary Baker Eddy. What were they doing with their schedule? They were giving a piece of their schedule to the one in need. Giving is the key word that you need to address. We state there's two things you need to do can even get started on working on solving a problem. One is you have to have given up on accepting your life the way it is as being the best that you would ever hope for. You have to open your door of consciousness that there is something better. Something better. If you don't think there is something better, if you hope at all that there is something better, then read with all your heart. Look at it carefully. Study it. Because it is entitled Fruitage. There are 85 testifiers that have verified testimonials of 486 healings between the group. So they averaged just under 6 healings apiece. 6 healings apiece. They were probably looking for a solution to one healing, and they ended up with 6. They had things healed that they didn't even realize they had as a problem, or they had forgotten about it because it was an overbearing problem. They had ones that had vision problems all of a sudden would forget to put on their glasses. They wouldn't even think about it because they didn't need them. The more you think about the problem, the less likelihood you have of being able to heal it. You have to think about something that, not something that is imperfect. What is always perfect? Read the definitions of God, the definition of man, the definition of good. They're defined as perfect. Think about that. You can't be thinking about evil and imperfection and a problem at the very same time that you're giving your whole heart to think about perfection. Create a goal list, a perfect model, paragraph that puts everything in there that you see that is perfect. You could put the definition of God in there. and include the scientific statement of being. Definition of man. I may have already said that. There are 700 pages of truth, and pick out some of your favorites. How about the statement by Habakkuk in the Bible? He says God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. How about the three quotes? Think about what Shakespeare said. Nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. It doesn't change the truth, but what we think is what we believe. It's what we live. It's what we experience. Do you want to experience? Do you want to experience being in an accident? Then think about it. Hello, wrote an article about the bicycle and the brick. He said, if you are riding a bicycle down the road, it doesn't matter how wide the road is, how smooth the road is, if you keep your eye on the brick, you will run right into it. And that's probably not going to be a very pleasant experience. I would say that's going to be initiating some chaos. Maybe a lot. Imagine you being on the edge of a cliff and riding down a narrow pathway. You might find out very quickly that it's not a good idea to think about the brick or focus on the brick. Bruce Lee focused on not being there when someone was throwing a punch at him or trying to squeeze him and get him into a death trap. He would disappear. He would eliminate being a target. What are we going to think and look about and do when we're driving a car? If somebody cuts in front of us, what are we going to say, even though he can't hear us? What are we going to do? If we're a car racer, or a motorcycle racer, or even a foot racer, are we going to think about the other car? Are we going to pay attention to what we should be thinking about? Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. What are we going to be thinking about? I gave you a few clues about how to think about the system. I gave you just the elements. It's like thinking about only the digits of 0 to 9 for mathematics, or the notes of A through G of music. Does mathematics have anything else to think about besides 0 to 9? Does music have anything to think about except A through G? Do the notes have any action on their own? Do the digits create any action on their own? Do the 7 synonymous terms for God of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life create anything on their own? No. The answer is no, all 3 examples. Does a fine wife that is an expert homemaker, does the title homemaker do anything on its own? No. Nothing. Does someone being the President of the United States, having that title, do anything on its own? Well, all you have to do is look at all the presidents that did nothing. Now, that'll tell you how much power the title has. If they do nothing, the title is inactive. How about a pianist? Vladimir Ashkenazy, a Russian, probably one of the finest, if not the finest pianist of all time. He was asked in a performance, in a Q&A period they had, right in the middle of the performance, one of the most famous critics that could find a problem with everyone, asked him. He told him, he said, I'm a well-known critic. How do you perform with such total perfection, absent of all flaw, time and time again. What do you think his reply was? Remember, he's Russian, so he had a little bit of an accent. And I probably will be butchering it up, but I'll give you my best shot. His response, I practice until the music plays me. What do you think? What do you think about his response? Should we practice following the laws of the universe, which are the laws of God, which are the laws of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love? Should we practice them until every thought, speech, and action is like Mary Baker Eddy states in the letter entitled The Secret? So that the only thing we can see is perfection in everything and everyone. What do you think would happen if two people did that? Would they ever have a conflict between them? How about if 5 people, 50 people, 500, 5,000? How about 8.3 billion people? If they all did it, everyone that's known to exist on planet Earth, if they all did it, if every single one of us followed the laws of God, followed the laws of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, how many wars would we be in? How many wars of conflict would be going on? How many accidents would there be? It's going to be the biggest zero that anyone could ever draw. It would be a zero that is infinitely large. The formula is easy. Are we going to have the discipline? Mary Baker Eddy says she makes strong demands on love. Do you think that's what she could mean? Strong demands on love. Within her own consciousness, within her own thought, speech, and action. That's what she means. If we have a sloppy house, everything out of order, what do you think we have in our thought? Do you think it's all structured? A perfect system? And everything about our schedule is ordered? We waste no time? How about if we use some of the time to put our house in order? And our house can be considered anything within consciousness. The house that we see and live in, that's in our consciousness. If we have it straight in our consciousness, it's going to be straight for anyone else to see. Someone that's never heard of us before, and they knock on the door, and we graciously let them in, and they see a perfect order. They don't know anything about us. Let's assume they don't. They're going to see a perfect order in the house. It's going to be clean. Everything's going to be in its right place. There's not going to be any dead plants. Everything's going to be alive, vibrant, a reflection of perfect God, a reflection of perfect consciousness. So what is the key word that Jesus did, that Mary Baker Eddy did, and I can guarantee you the other 3 people that had 15-minute appointments did? And Bruce Lee, what did Bruce Lee do? He was eliminating conflict. He was giving harmony. He was giving peace. He was giving beauty and perfection to everything he did. It's pretty hard. If you want to measure yourself against Bruce Lee about how you're doing in living the qualities of God, he was living the qualities of He was living in extreme appreciation for intelligence and wisdom and knowing and substance of spirit and the senses. He was using all five senses and life. He valued life above everything else. Not injury, but life. Abundance of life and principle. Wow. Principle, which is harmony and balance. Truth. No mistakes. He performed in a manner of perfection that even the best in the world couldn't figure out how he did it. The best in the world. He had one person that was 500 pounds, and I think another one was even pounds, an unbelievable mass. And these were people that had muscles. They weren't just fat. Nobody could touch him. Nobody could touch him. They would put their full weight forward to where he was when they started to punch. Their fist, which was lightning fast also, got there. The only thing that was there was air. A-I-R. And what did their weight do? It took them down to the floor. Because there was nothing there to stop it. They went to the floor. He cultivated, nurtured perfection. Frederick L. Rawson did the same thing. Not with martial arts. He did it with electricity. He was given an assignment which he accepted by one of the largest newspapers in the UK. That's where he was located. Born and raised there. And they said, there have been people from this Christian Science church in America that came over here, and we have reports that they were able to heal. We know you have a reputation for being as good as anyone can be with electricity, that people come from all over the world to consult with you to solve their electrical problems. And we know you're an avid student of the Bible. That's public record. That combination of your expertise in physics and being systematized and principled and your sincere interest about the Bible, we don't think there's anyone else that we could offer this assignment to that would be better than you. He accepted the assignment. He was commissioned by the newspaper to research if Christian Science really worked. And if these people really were that are claimed to be healed. Well, you already know the answer. Because three people that had 15-minute appointments. So he became a Christian Science practitioner as a result of his research. He didn't know anything about it. Never heard about it. But being an expert on electricity, what do you think he did in his research? What would you do? You know, the body is full of electricity. We've all experienced it, probably. If we're not wearing rubber shoes, we've probably shocked ourselves by walking across a carpet. If not doing other things that connected with electricity from another source. He measured the electrical charges inside the body before it was healed, and then he measured it after it was healed. And what do you think he found? That the negative charges were removed from the body as a result of the healing process. They were shorted out. They were shorted out. What do you think Mr. Rawson said was our purpose for being on planet Earth? Take a guess. You It's one of the most important things he ever said. And he healed. I'll tell you right now. He discovered how to heal back in time. In other words, turn the clock back to when the individual first had the problem. Not making it effective today for the future. He could turn the clock back and make it effective when they first discovered they had a problem. He healed back in time. It's all covered on the website. MBE, the website of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. The Institute was discovered in 1988. Excuse me. Founded. It was formed in 1988 as a nonprofit corporation. So, 37 years ago. And our website went up, one of the earliest ones, in 1995. So it's been up for 31 years. So what do you think he said as one of the most valuable statements he ever made? Just like the one Mary Baker Eddy made on page 146, and again on 330, she expanded it. He said, "Our purpose to be on planet Earth is to make other people happy." I met someone that seemed to be a really good individual. She was working in an entity that I visited for getting service, and she always seemed to be very joyful and very helpful. Anything she could do to help, she did. She was the best at customer service. And I said, "What is your biggest goal in life? You seem to be so happy all the time." She didn't know how she was so happy all the time. But I knew as soon as she gave me her answer. She said, "I want to be happy." She didn't tell the truth. She should have said, "I want to make other people happy." Because that's what she was practicing in her profession. Making other people happy. Serving their needs. Whatever problem they had, she wanted to solve it. She didn't realize that her own happiness was because she was making other people happy. Mary Baker Eddy says, "The greatest pleasure in life, the most rewarding thing we can ever do, is to give to others." And we put an embellishment on it here, which I'm sure she agrees with, which is to do it anonymously, and to be sure it is in the right way, so it'll be the most benefit to them. In other words, instead of giving a hand out, give a hand up. If they are out of money because they're a poor manager of money, giving them money is probably not the right thing to do. Probably better to give them what they would use the money to buy, assuming they were going to do it with a good cause. If they're living on the street, you don't want to give them drugs if that's what they really want to use the money for. They might do that only because they don't see any other alternative for any happiness. Maybe the drug takes them out of their problem mentally. Makes them unconscious that they have no place other than the sidewalk to lie on to sleep. They may be skilled and need a job. They may have loved their job, may have loved the skill that they were in, enjoyed their work. But for whatever reason, they don't have that job now. It could be anything. It could be food. So you can buy them food, clothing, transportation. We have a diagram of the ways that you can give to someone. And maybe money is one of the things All I'm saying is that if they are out of money because they are a poor manager of money, then that probably is not the right thing. And to give to an institution is one of the worst things you can do. Even the Red Cross is totally corrupt now. Totally corrupt. USAID, totally corrupt. All of the big organizations. You can bet there's not a single one that's not corrupt. The wealthiest man in the world, you know who he is? The one that has one of the finest, probably by far the finest electric car. He devoted time with the government, he and the president, and he started a department called the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE. The president calls it the Demolition Office of Government Efficiency. Because what they're doing is they're demolishing the inefficiencies and the corruption. I mean, they've saved billions and billions and billions of dollars. It will be in the trillions by it done. Not only that, the whole size of the government will be probably 10% of what it is right now. Or at least 10% when he started. And he started the day of the inauguration in January of 2025. Giving. We have to cultivate a life of giving. The Bible says we should tithe. That means a tenth part. That may be very generous, or it could be very stingy. Don't depend on percentages. Depend on what should be a generous heart. I know of one person that does very well, and they give away everything they don't need. You probably know his name. He makes millions every time he writes a book. He gives away everything except what he needs to live on, and he lives a modest life up in the Northeast, away from the public, away from traffic. The first thing we have to think about when we see other people is what Mary Baker Eddy expected an answer when she asked one of her students who came to her for help on a problem to solve that he couldn't seem to be making any headway. He didn't have to say anything. She could sense what the problem was. She says, "What do you do when you're walking out in public?" He had no idea what she was talking about. He didn't know what she was referring to whatsoever. So after a few moments of silence, she said, "Are you a Christian Scientist?" You know, with a big question mark. Then he knew exactly what he should be doing. He knew exactly. He knew that she could sense what he was thinking. So he knew he better be really honest with the answer. He said, "No, Mrs. Eddy, I am not a Christian Scientist." What do you think he should have been thinking about when he was walking in public? The same thing we've been discussing in this prayer treatment. The qualities of God. Being alert. Mind is alertness. Enlightenment. Being alert to anyone that's in need. Anyone that is in need whatsoever. A stray dog. A woman or a man or a child in a wheelchair. Anyone wearing glasses. Anyone that has a frown on their face. Any kind of an unsafe situation. Anyone that looks like they're in need for any reason whatsoever. I know of a case where a man came out of a department store and he was approached by somebody that looked like he was in clean work clothes, ready to go to work. And he said, "Could you give me some money?" He said, "Well, what do you need it for?" Because he could see he looked like everybody else who was ready to go to work or whatever. Didn't look like anyone in need. He said, "I haven't eaten in 2 days. I lost my job. I didn't have any savings, and here I am. I don't even have money for gas for my motorcycle to go and follow up on jobs that are available that I see in the throwaway newspapers. He wanted a job. That's what he needed. He asked for money. But what he really wanted was a job. The guy gave him a job after having a serious talk with him, asking what he did for a living. He said he was a handyman. The fellow that he asked had a list that he had been accumulating for several months of things that needed to be done at his home. And he was convinced after having a conversation with the guy that the guy really knew what he was doing. So he invited him to come up to his house and take a look at the list. So they went and got gas for his vehicle, and he followed him up to his house, showed him the list, and the guy said, "I can do everything on this list." The guy didn't ask him how long, because it'd be impossible to judge it, especially knowing himself. He knew he'd probably find other things that needed to be done that weren't even on the list, and that's what happened. He ended up working for him for 3 months. 3 months. And at the very next day of his last day of work and everything was done, he had a job lined up to go to another full-time job. Only because the guy took the time to ask him why he needed the money and what kind of work he did when he said he was out of a job. That's what Mary Baker Eddy would have hoped to hear from her student who was looking for help on the healing that he was having a trouble with, but he wasn't doing it. He wasn't doing it. Do we have any talents? If we've ever had a job, we have some kind of a talent. Do you have any kind of a hobby? Do you live in an area where the parents take their children to school because there's no bus service or it's too erratic or whatever? Have you ever thought about sharing the ride? Offering to take a neighbor's child, your children? You'd probably find they would want to take yours, and you could switch off and spend half of the time, or a third, or a fourth, or the fifth of the time. Maybe there's five parents all going to the same school. Each one of you could just do it one day a week instead of 5 days. If there's one thing evil wants to do, it's to break up unity. That's what this pandemic fraud was all about. Isolating people so they could not communicate with each other, so they couldn't breathe. It's like wrapping your mouth around the exhaust pipe of your vehicle to breathe your own exhaling breath. I mean, that is so stupid. How everybody would agree to that is beyond me. If we would have unity and reject it, they would have been unsuccessful in doing it. But there was no unity in rejecting it. How about rejecting the vaccine? They were all untried and untested. A large number of people lost their life and were injured, which was their goal. The goal of the manufacturer. That was their goal. And they accomplished it with flying colors. Make other people happy and don't take credit for it. Andrew Carnegie, he was one of the wealthiest people around 1900. He sold his biggest company, and it became U.S. Steel after they renamed it. He had about $350 million from the sale. That would be a lot of billions today. No, a lot more than that. I don't know what it would be. I didn't calculate it. Bliss Knapp, which is a Christian Scientist that Mary Baker Eddy nurtured from the time he was about 7 or 8 years old. He became the youngest president of the Christian Science main church. He was a lecturer, teacher, and so forth. She nurtured him. He made some simple investments when he was young, did nothing with them for his entire life, and when he passed, he had an estate of $350 million, and in today's dollars, I did calculate it, it was $4.3 billion. A Christian Scientist that was never involved in any investments other than to make one decision that was a few investments in land in California. And he was living in Boston. And that land became worth $350 million after, I don't know, probably 50 or 60 or 70 years. He did nothing, no management or anything. Are we willing to live a life of giving? If we're not, there's no use studying Christian Science unless you're trying to study it to cultivate a life of giving. Maybe you have read, maybe you had no hope at all, and then you read chapter 18 on fruitage. And so now you're starting to get interested. Well, that's okay. My salvation is not yours, and your salvation is not mine. Your salvation is not my business. My salvation is not your business. We each are running our own salvation. And we shouldn't try to run someone else's. We've got enough. Mary Baker Eddy said, we've got enough to do taking care of our own affairs without trying to take care of the affairs of someone else. Unless it's someone that's dependent, you know, a true dependent. Not somebody that just wants a free ride, but somebody that we're responsible for. When we think about the system, we got to consider the other two factors, which I didn't tell you yet. In mathematics, it's add, subtract, multiply, and divide. They are called operators. And you apply the operators to the digits, and you have an algorithm which produces a product. 3 times 6, 18. 3 cubed, 27. Square root, or the cube root of 27, is 3. Those are the operators. And you have several levels. In the system of divine metaphysics, you have 4 operators that are called the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. The Word is all the facts about God. That's what the radio was announcing when it was tuned into station KOG. All the facts about God. The second operator is the Christ. And the Christ is doing exactly what Jesus did, and he translated from whatever was before his eyes to the spiritual view. As was mentioned, he saw the perfect image. He converted what the physical appearance was to the invisible truth. The third operator is Christianity. And that's exactly what he did. He practiced what he knew about God, converted it from being a sick or blind person or dead or whatever it was, to the truth about it, and making those statements and understanding what they mean and living them, including a life of giving, brought forth the healing. That's Christianity. That's living a life of following the laws of God, translating the visible that is not good to the invisible truth, and living that as your life. That's Christianity. And that automatically brings forth healing. But we can't focus on the healing. We have to focus on living the life. Christianity, that's what we have to focus on. The more we think about the problem, the less likely we are to heal it. The bicycle and the brick. You want to run into the brick? That's why people don't look down when they're at great heights. Do you think a tightrope walker thinks about the height they are off of the floor? If they do, they're in trouble. They're in trouble. What is number four? Number four is the automatic translation. It is Jesus ascending. It is rising above the belief that life, truth, and intelligence is in matter such that it doesn't even exist in your consciousness. Evil doesn't exist. It's doing what the letter said about the secret. It's not a part of your thought. It's not a part of your consciousness. You are already at the elevated level. You are living the science, which is perfect. That's the only thing you can conceive of. Jesus told his disciples, "Don't touch me," just before he was ready to ascend. "Don't touch me." He had already overcome the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter by resurrecting himself. He already went through the trial period to know that he could keep his thought there, and as a result, he was able to ascend because there was nothing holding his body down. Gravity no longer existed because that is a material concept. It's a concept that there's a force besides spirit, a force besides matter, a force besides truth. There is no force that is matter-based. And that's why he was able to ascend. There was nothing to hold him down. He had no belief about anything other than God being reality, the truth being reality, mind, spirit, soul, life and love being the reality. Okay, the third dimension. The first dimension in math is the digits. The second dimension is the operators, add, subtract, multiply, and divide. And in the system of divine metaphysics, it's the word Christ, Christianity, and science. And the third dimension are the levels of understanding. And Mary Baker Eddy tells us on page 115 and 116 exactly what those levels are. There are three levels of mortal mind and one level of immortal mind. Immortal mind is the level that is God, perfect idea, and perfect man. And the three levels of mortal mind, they start at the lowest, which is depravity, no morality at all. And the first level above that, which is level two, second degree, is called morality. And the third is spirituality. Fourth is the one already described, which is immortal mind, which is perfect God, perfect idea. You can ask everyone that you can dream up or think or make contact with, and they probably won't be able to tell you anything about what this is, and yet this is so important. Mary Baker Eddy says she's reduced it to a system. I've heard comments say that it's too difficult. It's simple. It's simple. Think about what has been said. It's simple. It's very simple. But it takes discipline. You can't live on emotion and live where you get rid of all the things that emotion causes, which is chaos, disagreements, misunderstandings. You can't live a life of goodness and let the five physical senses instead of the spiritual senses control you. If you do, you'll not have any permanent lasting joy. You won't have any permanent lasting love or anything else. Intelligence, wisdom, knowing, substance, you're going to be building on sand. soon as a wave comes along, you're going to be leveled. If you depend on the five physical senses, you're going to have problems. If you don't have principle in the way you operate your thinking, talking, and actions, you're going to have problems. If you live a life like the prodigal son, in fact, that's the life that Wentworth Winslow had. He came from a wealthy family. He went to the best school you could go to. He was all set to have a life of financial success, rubbing elbows with the wealthy, having a successful financial business and so forth. He took the life of a prodigal son. He said, that's boring to me. I want to go have fun. A sensual life. Before he knew it, he had a prognosis of death. No solutions. He was on the end. No medical help could help him. He had the best doctors because of them. No solution. Somebody introduced him to Christian Science and he had no hope. But he finally decided, well, I have nothing else except to pass on, so I might as well check it out. And that's the way so many people are attracted to Christian Science, that they have no other alternative because they've been given up by the medical profession, who didn't have the foggiest idea on how to cure. And by the way, Nikola Tesla, he was the most expert than anyone's ever been on electricity. That's what the car Tesla was named after. He had 6,000 patents, and every patent was suppressed. They kept them locked up, didn't release them, and he couldn't use them. And he felt like he was a failure. He died penniless, passed on penniless. He should have been the wealthiest man that ever existed, next to Solomon. Well, that's not what happened. All the greedy organizations, corporations, they wanted to rip off the public. He invented how to have free electricity. Free. Anyway, I've gone into details about him before. We don't have time here. To make a long story short, when he passed on, the biggest intelligence agency went in there and stole all of his papers because they didn't want anybody else to have them. They had their best people. This is the biggest intelligence agency. You know who it is. Starts with a C, three letters. They couldn't make hide nor hair of them. Couldn't figure out anything about what it was. They were so advanced. So they took them to the number one professor on electricity. And he was a professor at MIT, one of the finest universities ever. And who do you think was the professor that knew all about electricity, knew the most, let's put it that way? He'd probably have a hard time matching Frederick L. Rawson, but they were in a totally different time period. Rawson had been gone many decades. So, the top person that was known throughout the world for electricity was our president's uncle. First name was John. That's the middle name of our president. That was his uncle. He was named after him. So, they took the papers to our president's uncle. And what do you think our president's uncle did? He knew they were corrupt from beginning to end, as does our president, and as our president knew it as a young man. So he made copies of everything and put them in safekeeping, totally safekeeping, that even the intelligence agency couldn't find them. And then he gave a copy back to the intelligence agency. And when he passed on, who do you think got the papers? Our president. Our president has the papers from Tesla. all of the patents, all of the paperwork, all of his research. Our president has them. When his home was illegally raided while he was busy in New York on lawsuits defending himself, they planned it this way for them to raid his home when he wasn't there. And they wanted all the cameras turned off, which they did not do. And they were primarily looking for one thing we know of, which were the nuclear codes, because he never gave them up when he left office in January 2021. And they were probably also looking for the papers, thinking they would get the originals or whatever copies that our president had, but they didn't find that either. They didn't find anything. They turned the house upside down. They didn't find anything. They had a whole team of people there an entire day. Left the house a mess. They didn't get anything, except some of the ones responsible ended up, I think, with an end of life because it was all illegal. Anyway, when Andrew Carnegie gave his $350 million away, he didn't give it away in money. He built libraries and university buildings and so forth over in northern UK, I think Ireland is where he was from, and in the US, on the eastern area of the US. And everything had his name on it. In fact, Andrew Carnegie Hall, Carnegie Hall, which was where Vladimir Ashkenazi was performing, all named after him. So if you're giving away for ego, you're having a problem. Your gift is tarnished. It's better than not doing anything. And again, it's not necessarily what you do, but the reason you're doing it. If you're doing it for ego, that's obviously not the right reason. So we have to live a life of giving. I read a quotation recently, and it said, when you go around the corner, what said when you pass on, but we call it going where you go from a visible to an invisible state. Anyway, when you go around the corner, the quote said, you can take everything with you and as much as you want if it is what you have given away. But if it's what you have taken, you have to leave it all behind. Everything. Now, what can you give away that you can take with you? Qualities. Qualities. If you express genuine spiritual love, that's a quality you can give away all day long. And I'm not talking about sensual, I'm talking about spiritual love. Doing things to help other people. Unselfishly. And as much as possible, anonymously. You can take all of it you want. How about intelligence? How about helping somebody solve a problem? Like Frederick L. Rawson. He was an electrical consultant. A Christian Science practitioner. Just being a practitioner is a help. But do they know the system? And what is their motive? Are they trying to follow what Mary Beck Reddy says? She developed the system. I mean, if she did that, that means that any 2 or 3 or 5 or 1 million or 10 million people can do the same thing and get the result. Because it's a system that has been proven with laws and structure and a system. It's got the structure and it has the system and it's got proven laws that work. And at the top of it is having a life of giving. I know practitioners. Some are very wealthy. They could give away $100 million and not lose it, not miss it. They didn't necessarily earn the money, but they were in a family that did. What is your motive? And just giving money away isn't the solution. But it's easy to find people that have a need. If everyone in the U.S. would help one person in need, we would have no homeless people. We would have no unemployed people. We would have no people that were in need of any kind, of any shape whatsoever. There's so many ways we can help other people. There's no excuse not to have a life of giving. And that's on the list, at the very top, next to being realizing that you want a life better than what you have, in some way. And I don't mean a life with more money. I'm talking about a life with more spiritual value. Something that brings true joy to you. We will prepare the checklist of the primary features of the difference between evil and good, and what you need to be careful about, because evil is very deceptive. It lives on decoy. It lives on dividing and conquering. It lives on disparaging character, you know, which means they're making up lies and promoting the lie in order to try to disparage the credibility of somebody. So we will give you the opportunity to see all that. And we have a lot of it already. It's just not for just this treatment. It's for everyone. It's under effective healing, as I mentioned at the beginning. Effective healing and how to heal everything. So that gives you 95% of what you need. But we will do this other checklist. I will close with a Diapason of Heaven prayer treatment by Mary Baker Eddy that she gave to her most advanced class in her metaphysical college in 1898. It was the final class. And after that, she expected people to rely on her writings instead of having individual instruction by her. And it will be on a focus of love, because she wrote 7 of them, one for each of the 7 synonymous terms. And this will be on love, because our focus here has been making sure you appreciate that all of them together must be cultivated. So here is the Diapason of Heaven on Love by Mary Baker Eddy. And if there's any thought that comes to me while I'm reciting that, I will put it at the end after the Amen. And when I say the end, that the Amen may not be the end. Regarding the Diapason of Heaven prayer, all of them, or the other 6 synonymous terms for God, are in one part, but this one being a consolidation of all 7 is longer, and it's divided parts, so I will only recite part number A. The other 2 are numbered 7B and 7C, but you can read those on your own. They are on the website. Just go to Mary Baker Eddy in the website, which is up at the menu. And it will be listed there under. So, this is Diapason of Heaven by Part 7A. Declare often, love is my God, and my God is love. Good is my God, and my good is love. Love is my God, and my love is good. Love is my principle, and my principle is love. Love is the law of my being. Divine love is enthroned in my consciousness as my God. This is the Word of God. Amen. There is one other thought, and that is that if you have a desire to contact us to ask any question whatsoever about the Bible, any of Mary Baker Eddy's writings, about Christian Science, about the system of divine metaphysics, anything at all that you think, and we'd be delighted to hear from you. Use long emails, our interested parties. If you provide your phone number and you're in the U.S., we will call you. And if not, then the instructions, contact form, communicate with us through voice, through a service called Telegram. It is Saturday, May 16, 2026, 14:32. Thank you for listening. The end.